Welcome to the Career Happiness Podcast. My name is Soma Ghosh. I am the founder of a business called the Career Happiness Mentor. And within this podcast, we explore themes around career happiness, confidence, well-being, and so much more. Not only do I do one-to-one personalized episodes to really, really support you as a listener, but you will have the chance to listen to really, really amazing guests from all corners of not just world, but different industries. It's really, really important that you are not only happy in your career, but you make time to progress in a way that feels right for you. So if you want to have more energy in your career, change your career, find out more about how to potentially start a business, or even help your teenager with careers advice, this is the podcast for you. Thanks so much. So, hey, everybody, we have Lee with us here today. Hi, Lee, how are you doing?
Hi, Summer, I'm really good, thank you. Hi, everyone.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the podcast show today. And me and Lee, before we kind of started recording, I was telling her that I've just won an award for the podcast, which is totally unexpected. But one of the things I wanted to mention is kind of how I met Lee. I think I met you on LinkedIn, didn't I?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it was quite an introduction.
Yeah, and I was posting about how I'd been hacked on Facebook before and my accounts were linked and I was trying to get back on Instagram, and Lee actually had a call with me and gave me some advice about what to do. And I was telling her that part of the reason why I think I won this award is because of my visibility on Instagram. So I just wanted to say thank you again for that. It was really helpful.
No problem at all. I know how difficult it is to build something up, to build your visibility up, and then to lose it over something that is just not even within your control. So I was just like lucky and thankful that I could help you, and now look at you, winning awards and everything.
Yeah, no, thank you. Well, partly it was because of your kindness as well, but also your knowledge, and that's why you're here today. And I'm really, really excited for you to come on here and talk about your wonderful, wonderful business. So kind of to home in on that a little bit, Lee, I'd like to find out from you, so you can tell the audience today, you know, tell us about you and your business and what you do.
Yeah, sure. So I am a strategist by personality and character trait, and also by my career now. So I work primarily with startups on their business strategy and all of the different strands that go together. So not just the growing and revenue and sales, but also, okay, so if you do your sales and marketing and you get loads of demand, what happens? Like, can you actually look after that demand? Because particularly in the social media age, we have these kind of go viral moments, and you want to capitalize on that and make the most of it. And you can't always do that if you're not prepared. So I look at both sides of the strategy for businesses and help them feel in control. It's their business and it's going in the direction that they want. I've been doing it for about 8 years. Previous to that, I worked in financial services technology for some investment banks. Primarily in the last section of my career was around COO and chief of staff type roles. So I've always had this natural affinity to running the business and making sure that it's running as efficiently as possible.
Well, that's really, really interesting, Ali, and I'm going to ask you a little bit more about your career in a bit. Mm-hmm. But in terms of your business, what are the type of like ideal clients that come to you most often? Who, obviously, it's business owners, but to home in on that, what is it that they're struggling with within their business?
It's usually the plate spinning, right? It's usually they think that business is, I have a product or service that I want to sell, and I can put it online, or I can sell it in a marketplace and people will pay me. And that is effectively a business, right? That's what we sign up for. But the things that catch people out are the operations around it. How do you know where to sell? How do you know what platforms are going to work for you, where your customers are, and then what are the risks involved? So when they've bought your product or your service, how do you look after them? And when you come into this, I don't think many people fully understand just how much you're thinking of everything at the same time. You don't focus on one thing. When you get a team, absolutely you can. But when you're a fairly new startup or someone even just looking into the idea of it, the amount of things that you have to have under your control at the very beginning is enormous, and it's overwhelming. Now, coming from the COO background, COO role by definition is one of generalism. We look at everything at the same time, and it's a skill that you can develop, but not many people have that as a natural skill. So most of the people who come to me are feeling kind of overwhelmed by all of the decisions that have to be made, and then the responsibility of getting those decisions right. So yeah, I can go from somebody with an idea on the back of a napkin, or you know, an idea born over a dinner party conversation, all the way to companies that are looking for kind of exit and acquisition.
Okay, that's really interesting. For people who are listening who may not know that much about CEO and chief of staff, can you explain that a little bit more, Lee, just so that people who are listening may get a bit more of a clearer understanding, if you don't mind?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So COO is the chief operating officer. So within an organization, you have the boss, the CEO, whose job it is to bring more business in and to give direction to the company. That's the kind of managing director, CEO, founder role. But then all of the business administration, the logistics, making sure that everything actually gets done, typically starts falling into this operations bucket. And that's what the chief operating officer looks after. So that includes looking after finances, looking after human resource and staffing issues, looking after risk. So it's the COO's role to notify the founder or the CEO of any risks that may be coming up with the way that they're currently doing business. We can look at tech, we can look at strategy, we can look at ops. And when I was in the larger companies, even things like overseeing the use of the facilities themselves. So were my people in the building? Did they have a desk? Did they have a phone? You know, it's all the minute details that a company needs in order to keep doing well and just focusing on delivering their product or service to their customer. So it's the back end, which typically doesn't sound as sexy or as exciting, but it is where you make the profit, because your profit as a business is made up of two things: how much you sell and how much you spend. The selling part, the revenue part, is the CEO's job. What you spend is the COO's job, and your job in that space is to spend as little as possible while still maximizing the efficiency and the performance of the business.
Thank you for explaining that. And, you know, I think it's the reason why I wanted you to go into a bit more detail. I knew you would give like a really, really lovely detailed explanation, because it's one of the things that I remember when we met and we were talking, you would always explain things really well. So thank you for that.
No problem.
In terms of your career a little bit, let's talk about that a little bit. And we will come back to business, because that is one of the things that I really want to dive into a bit more. But with your career, like, you know, you've highlighted some of the things that you were doing in your career, but obviously this is a careers podcast as well. And I'd love to know, Lee, during your time within your career, what were some of the kind of high points and low points, and what did you learn from them?
Oh, when you've got a long career, that's always a really difficult question. So the first thing, the biggest lesson I learned was being flexible. I came out of university with a law degree. I fully expected to go into law, and that had always been my career path choice. And then I had an opportunity to work on a technical project during a vacation, and just got hooked on both technology and implementing these new techs, but also working in companies with these much bigger visions. And I realized that actually that was something that was of more interest to me. I suppose giving myself permission to make that shift was something that then has progressed through my whole career. So I've never been put off by, you haven't got that experience or you haven't got that qualification. I know my capacity to learn it, and I know where I can add value. And so that's been a real significant learning for me. I guess in terms of moments in my career where they're aspirational or highlights, I was, when I got my first COO role, it was in a bank. I was looking after quite a significant department within the bank, and it wasn't so much the job title as the amount of responsibility. You know, I was really, really proud and grateful to have that moment of someone saying, yeah, we trust you to look after this. And that was always a point where it felt that all my effort of learning not just the how-tos and the tasks of my job, but actually why we do things, that really, really helped. And so then as I became, you know, progressed through and became more senior, that was something that I brought with me. You know, I was very keen to make sure that people knew when they were doing a good job and what it meant to the larger organisation for them to show up and perform their role as well as they can. And, you know, I'm very fortunate that during my time, I've mentored some amazing people who have gone on to do amazing things themselves. And I think that's all we can ask for when we're in senior positions, that we use that leadership for progressing other people's careers as much as our own.
Thank you for sharing that. And you said something there about, you know, leadership and mentoring. And I want to like tap into that a little bit, because it was really interesting. The previous guest I had on this podcast, we were talking a lot about leadership, Lee. And I know when we spoke a little bit about leadership. Yeah. And, you know, there's so much talk about, oh, you've got to do this, you've got to do that to be a good leader. And you mentioned there the word mentoring. What do you think, Lee, within kind of like a workplace or even just, you know, being a mentor in general, whether it's business or career, what are some of the qualities that are needed to be a good mentor?
That's such a good question, because the word mentor sometimes gets misdefined when you see it in different avenues. To me, mentoring is about using your expertise and experience of a role to help the people coming through that same career path to understand what's going to be required and almost provide them with some insights that you wish you had. You know, if somebody had been around to tell me that, this would have been a lot easier. It's not about creating someone in your image. You know, we're not trying to clone people. And I think sometimes there's a risk of mentors slipping into this scenario of, well, just do everything that I do and do everything that I say and you'll have success. And a good mentor realizes that you give them the tools and the knowledge, but part of your role is also to support them as an individual so that they own that role. So you're not telling them how to be that person. You're telling them, with these skills and these pieces of experience and my learnings from mistakes I've made, we can get you to a better degree of your performance, which can benefit from that knowledge. I think I do see quite a few people in the mentoring space, particularly inside large organisations, who fall into that just copy what I do mentality. And that's not good mentoring. It's not good leadership. It's about bringing out the best in that person using what you know about what's going to be required.
I really, really love that, Lee. And I think it goes back to this idea of, you know, I mean, part of my business, I do career mentoring, but it's never about me implanting what I've learned in my career, because I'm dealing with clients from all different backgrounds. It's about helping them to develop themselves and be at their best. And I think exactly there in the workplace is similar. This clone culture that, you know, it's not helpful, is it, at all? Because you're not actually helping that person to grow in the way they want to, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we forget that businesses don't benefit from everyone acting and behaving the same. They benefit from diversity. They benefit from different opinions and different approaches. And we typically think that people not agreeing is going to be detrimental to a company. But actually, if it's done in an empowering way, it can be the difference between success and failure. Because I don't want people around me who are just going to say yes all the time. I want to be challenged. I want them to think of things that I haven't thought of. And in order to do that, they have to see the world a different way. And if people see the world a different way, the likelihood is they're not going to be like you. And so I always try to make a point of bringing in different viewpoints and different types of people and their approach, because I know it adds to that conversation in a way that more versions of me would just create one single path, and not necessarily the best path, just the one that I'm most comfortable in. So bringing other people in helps me know that if we choose a path, it's because we've got everyone on board with us.
Yeah, definitely. And I really, really like that, what you were saying there about the diversity. And it also goes a little bit into, you know, like people avoid like conflict. And when I'm talking conflict, I'm not saying like arguments at work, but conflict where you're actually going to grow and learn and have that growth mindset, as opposed to that closed mindset, which I think a lot of people are worried about in the workplace. But I think that's the only way that you can really develop yourself. Well, that's my belief anyway. I don't know what you think on that, Lee.
Oh, absolutely. I think when we learn to challenge or question, it's not always about disagreeing. It's about asking for clarification, because if you go ahead with the information you have at that point, you won't feel confident that you know what is expected. You won't feel that you're definitely going to be able to achieve the outcomes that we're after. If we don't have that clarification, you can spend an awful lot of time doing essentially nothing. So to me, it's not about that conflict and disagreeing for the sake of it. It's about feeling strong enough to say, hey, explain this more to me. Help me understand why we're doing this. Because once my head's there and I understand the reasoning behind it, that helps our minds unlock more creative ways of trying to come to that solution. If we don't have that clarity, then we typically just stand behind the instructions that we've been given, and we might miss something through no fault of our own. So having leaders who want some pushback, want some people asking questions, double checking why they're going down a particular route, makes everyone perform so much better.
Yeah, no, thank you. Really, really insightful response there. And yeah, a lot to think about for the listeners, I think, there, Lee. Thank you so much. I'd love to ask you this question, because I just think that when I've heard a little bit about your business, I'd love to find out a little bit more from you on if it was there like a story or a moment that kind of led you to starting your business. I'd love to find out a little bit more about that from you today, Lee.
I guess it's quite an interesting tale. So I've been doing a chief of staff role within the bank that I was currently working in 2016. And in chief of staff is very similar to chief operating officer. They're very similar roles. And one piece of it is actually working with external providers like consultancies that come in and help. Now, usually in the larger companies, it's the big four like Accenture, PwC, Deloitte, and so on. And I found myself getting quite frustrated because my leadership team would say, hey, we've got this problem. And I would say, have you thought of doing X? And they say, oh, no, you know, we've tried that, or that's not going to work. We need to bring in some consultants. Okay, fine. So we bring these consultants in on, you can imagine, quite a hefty amount of money. They would go round to a number of people and interview them. And I was always one of those people. And then they put together this rather large pack of all their findings. Now, anyone who's worked at that level and has seen that pack knows that it might be 40 pages long, but the leadership team will only ever read the executive summary. they don't ever read the rest of it. But what I noticed time and time again is the recommendations I had made in-house that had been disregarded had been collated together, put on a pretty PowerPoint and delivered by this very expensive consultancy. And it was suddenly like life-changing and game-changing, and they couldn't have been happier. And I just started to get really frustrated because I thought there's this element of who I am and what I can offer that just I can't break out of the hierarchy that I'm in, because it was based on my job role says that I shouldn't have that kind of insight. So I decided to start my own business, and I immediately thought that I would do exactly that. I would go into corporate consultancy because that was my background. And I got my first position, an assignment through another company, which I was extremely grateful for. It was about 3 months and I absolutely hated it for a variety of reasons. But one being, the job was frustrating me, but I think the environment had also been frustrating me, and I hadn't really recognized that at that point. So I did 3 months and I thought, I just don't like this at all. And I was thinking maybe I should go back. Maybe I should just go back and just get back in my little box at corporates. And then, and it stay with me on this story because it gets better, I promise. In August of 2016, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Now, normally, that would be a moment of, you know, real shock and panic and seen as a really negative experience. And for a lot of people, that is unfortunately the case. With me, I was given, thankfully, a really good diagnosis. They were very confident that they could clear it away. And, you know, 8 years later, I am in remission still, and everything's fine. But what it did in that moment was it got me out of that situation. And I had to have surgery. I had to have treatment. And so I'd been dithering about what to do. And then all of a sudden, the decision was made for me. And while I was going through the treatment, I was fortunate enough to not have to try to work alongside it. And so I used that time to figure out what is it I want to be doing. And as I started to get more active at the end of treatment, I started going along to events for startups, because I thought, well, I am a startup and maybe they'll have some idea of what I know what I can do. I just need to be able to package it in the right way. And I went to event after event and would spend hours sometimes pinged in the corner with several founders who were asking me so many questions about business. Like, how do people, you know, why do you get VAT registered? What's the difference between a limited company and sole trader? Like, why do I need people? How do I find people? How do I deal with suppliers? And what I realized in that moment is, oh, there's nobody telling people how to run a business. And the more of these events I went to, the more I realized all the information was about make more sales, generate revenue, grow. And there wasn't a huge amount out there for the day-to-day running of the business and the resilience that's needed and the way to try and think of everything at once. And that's where your startup partner, my business, came from, because I thought, you don't need somebody else telling you how to sell your product. You need someone to stand beside you when things are getting difficult, and you're not sure of the right way to turn, or things are going brilliantly and you're worried that it's a blip and it's all going to disappear. And, you know, how do you grow confidently? And so it was a really elongated process for me, but one that ultimately I look back on and I'm so grateful that I was given the opportunity to go through that process, albeit could have done without the diagnosis. But it was a big part of me recognizing in a very real way, life is short. You do not have time to put up with other people's agenda. You have to create your own. And I've lived by that ever since.
Wow, it's very inspiring, Lee. Wow, honestly. I didn't know that story. I'm glad I asked that question though. honestly, it's very inspiring, and I can resonate, not so much with, obviously, I'm sorry to hear about, you know, that you were unwell, but I've been very, very unwell the last year, and I can resonate with you, you know, just wanting to live life. And I loved what you were saying about, you know, part of what you're doing with your business is to help with the ongoing process of when you're having those blips, or when it is going really, really well and you think, okay, I've achieved all this success, and like, is it just a one-time thing? I love that. I really, really love that. And I think that one thing I was going to ask you is, there's so much information online, and I know when I started my business 7 years ago, Lee, there was a lot of this, what I like to call shiny object syndrome, which I'm sure you are familiar with. And often people would like sign up to all these courses, these webinars, and even now myself, I can spot within 30 seconds, because I've managed to survive having a business, what is complete BS and what is actually legitimate. And what I wanted to ask next is kind of like, what do you think people can do when they're either in a new business or they've been in their business for maybe a year or two and they don't know those key steps to keep on pushing through? Because I think often people just give up too easily, don't they? Because of all the noise on the internet.
Oh, God, yeah. And it's not even just, you know, we all use Google. Probably inappropriately, right? We Google something, we think it's, you know, the law that comes through. And in reality, particularly around business advice, 80% of it is pure sales. They're just trying to sell to you. And you can spend an awful lot of money discovering that, even with that course, even with that workshop, even with that 7-step program, you're still no closer to understanding how to run your business. And it is so frustrating. And it's one of the reasons that I started up my new platform called Advisor in Your Pocket, because one of the things that drives me is I say to people, I'm founder-led. And what I mean by that is, I don't look at a business as an objective, rational thing. I look at it as an idea that has been created by a person, and that person had a vision of what they see that idea becoming. And most of the information that's out there is much more generic than that, and doesn't allow you to take all of the information that's out there and then customize it to what you particularly want. You know, a lot of it assumes that you want to be as big as possible, as rich as possible. You want to, you know, take over the world. And for a lot of business owners, they don't want that. Yeah. And I think actually that's a large portion of people who do think, I can't do this, is because that sense of creating something that's far bigger than you had in your mind is really off-putting. And I think that is a huge proportion of people who think, I am enjoying what I do, but you see this kind of, if it was on a graph, you'd see this plateau appear of, I'm successful now, but I don't think I want to be more so. And then that feeds into what I think is the second reason people may think this isn't for them, which is social media. Yeah. Right? Social media trying to tell you what being an entrepreneur, what being a founder is like. And if you're being told you should want to be as big as possible, because that's what social media is telling you as well, and you don't want that, then you can really internalize that as I'm clearly not entrepreneur material. I'm not a founder. I shouldn't be a business owner. When in reality, we have to remember that a lot of social media is highly edited, highly customized to show a view of reality that does not exist. Mm-hmm. And it can really distort people's view of what business ownership is going to feel like and what they're going to be able to do. And it really impacts their confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, they just, because they don't want that they see out there, they just feel that means they can't have it at all. Whereas being founder-led, I come in from, you tell me where you want to go, and my job is to get you there. Now, if that's quite modest to begin with, that's fine, right? Mm-hmm. We'll get you there, because that's what is in your head at the moment. That's the first milestone that we need to break. When you get there, we revisit it. And sometimes people say, you know what, I'm good. That's all I wanted. Let me just stay here now. And that's fine. But also now they have a bit more proof of what they're capable of. They've now got that proof and confidence to say, yeah, let's push it a bit more. Because I can see it now. And I think that is one of the biggest issues with the amount of information that's out there is it's generic. It's based on this idea of entrepreneurship that is irrelevant for so many people. And so with Advisor, it's much more, here's the information that you need to consider. Now, what do you want to do? And what I'm trying to do is get people to think and own their business from a mindset perspective as well. So they don't allow all of that noise from outside to jeopardize their reason for keep going.
Thank you for sharing that, Lee. And I think one of the things that I was going to say there is, I think this is probably why when we met, I really resonated with you, because it's about creating a business with your own agenda in mind without being bogged down. I think when we also spoke, we might have also spoken about the fact that, you know, building relationships and having those key connections like offline are really, really important, because one thing I've been reflecting on as well, Lee, is when I make connections with people, even if I might not talk to them all the time, I do try and touch base with them. I do try and have calls with people, and I'm not doing it with anything in mind. It's just because I think relationships are really, really important. And I think what social media sadly does sometimes is that relationship building isn't there. And so when people recommend me for my business or vice versa, that part hasn't been formed. And I think, and I know a little bit maybe of what you're going to say about this, it's also important to build those relationships offline as well, isn't it, to build your business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the typical rule for being able to business and market your business is very much around that kind of seven touch points. Some people say six, some people say eight. It's around that number. But the idea is that people need to see you in several different contexts before it really goes in. And it's infuriating as a business owner when you feel like you've done nothing but tell people about you, and then all of a sudden, you know, another contact will come in and say, oh, can I introduce you to so-and-so? And they go, oh, I didn't know you did that. You're like, but that's literally all I talk about. So it is quite frustrating. But no, it is about having contacts in different places, because business owners are just people. What do we do as people when we want to make a decision? Yes, we'll Google and look on the internet, but then we also ask people that we trust. And trust is something that takes a long time to build up. The reason so many of these kind of referral network organizations are so successful is because they understand that know, like, and trust, that, you know, get to know one another, get to like one another, and that builds the trust that people will be prepared to put you forward and putting a good word. And that trust takes far longer if it's only through social media or only through face-to-face. It is that combination of the two, so that each side, both off and online, calibrate with each other and back each other up. They support the argument that you are who you say you are and you can deliver what you say you can deliver.
Really, really interesting. I think also a couple of the other things that I thought would be interesting for us to talk about today as well, Lee, and I think you're going to be an ideal person to discuss this with, is this discussion around business failure. So at the beginning, I mentioned obviously about my hacking, and for a short time I thought, oh, okay, how am I going to rebuild this? And I did it because I'd already established a lot of relationships with people, and I really, really was able to create just good content and go back to my clients and just work with them. But often I think that people don't take time to talk about business failure because, as you said, online it's perceived as this, you know, don't talk about that, don't want to talk about it, something that I shouldn't be proud to talk about. It's not that I'm proud. I think it builds resilience personally for me. And I'd love to kind of find out from you, what can we learn from maybe the things in business that don't go well? What are the kind of teachable things that we can take away as a business owner?
Yeah, I mean, I think in your instance, and something that is a huge contributor to your success following the upheaval on Instagram, is that you didn't shy away from talking about it. And I think we do try to sometimes paint this perfect picture of everything. And when things aren't going well, we think we've got to wait until we come out the other side. And so you'll notice on social media, there's tons of people who talk about failure, but only after they've succeeded. And I always find it quite interesting because in the moment, is people feel too raw, too vulnerable. But actually, if you can find a way of communicating with people in general, just the marketplace in general, it's not about, you know, airing your dirty laundry everywhere. You don't need to, you know, tell them how much is in your bank account. But it is so important to building up that trust element, that people feel that you're going to be honest with them. And I think in your case, you were very authentic when you explained to people what had been going on. Yeah. And you brought people along with you. Yeah. You see it on social media all the time. People who are authentic and who speak from the heart and are genuine in, you know, either asking for help or just simply saying, this is where I am. Can you just give me a minute to kind of get my head sorted? What you see usually is this swell of support from people. And that's not because of sympathy. And I think that's one of the things that people worry about, that, oh, people just feel sorry for me. It's absolutely not. I think, I genuinely think it's because people see themselves in that moment. They empathize and they imagine what they would feel like in that situation, and they want to show up and demonstrate that you're not alone. And I think that's particularly true with businesses that are going through a rough time. Even if ultimately the business doesn't make it, the more honest you can be, the more you can communicate, the more support you get from people, and you will know that you've not left anything on the table in terms of the effort to, you know, save the business and save yourself. But we struggle to be that vulnerable. Being a business owner is about vulnerability, and it's an area that I'm really interested in at the moment because we do not talk about it like that. We talk about it as something that's exciting and, you know, almost like a celebrity status for some of the business owners that have been really successful. But I talked to enough founders to realize that the moment they put their product live, or the moment they create their logo, or the moment they create that social media profile, it is a vulnerability like you will not get anywhere else, because you are literally putting yourself at that point into the marketplace and say, am I worth this? Mm-hmm. It's huge, and we don't talk about it. And even if that business ultimately doesn't progress and you have to close, we should always celebrate the moment that you put yourself in that position, because it is exceptionally hard for people who haven't done it to understand the level of vulnerability that comes with it.
Yeah, and no, thank you for sharing that. That's really, really interesting. And I think, yeah, we do need to talk about it. But I think when we are vulnerable, we connect more with people. Like, definitely, by me being on social media and talking about even my illness, endometriosis, it's helped me connect and meet so many amazing people, Lee, who are not even connected to business, but they've told people about what I do, and it's kind of like a parallel effect. And that's how we connect, and that's how we build on things, I think, personally. One of the things that we were speaking about before we recorded that I was really kind of, I thought would be really good to talk about a little bit, is that obviously all of us have lived through the pandemic, and we saw a lot happen during the pandemic, and, you know, a lot of amazing businesses aren't here anymore. But I'd like to ask you today, as I'm recording this in 2024 with you, is that, you know, have you seen changes with being a business owner since then? And what's kind of the biggest change that you believe that you've seen with solo business owners?
Yeah, so I was very much around and online and active during the pandemic. I was not one of these people sitting at home learning a new hobby or skill, because obviously with smaller businesses, there was one big issue that happens with a pandemic. Nobody expected it. And something that big businesses do automatically, but small businesses do not, is contingency. Like, what if? What if scenarios are huge? In a small business, you find that, what I found kind of leading into the pandemic and that sort of year of disruption, was the companies that recognized that they needed to do something different, that they needed to come up with plan B, stood a much greater chance of survival than those who got slightly paralyzed by indecision. Like, this is what I am, this is what my business is, and they couldn't pivot to something else. And I think the story since then has been around that agility. It's not about having one plan and sticking to it anymore. It's about, and this is very much, you know, I'm not a business planner. I am a business strategist, because I believe strategy is about that agility. It's the ability to say, that's where I'm trying to get to. What are the routes that I can get there? And if something gets in my way, how do I get around that? That's strategy. And that's been the story since the pandemic, because it hasn't been one and done, right? We didn't come out of lockdown, everything went back to normal, however much all of us wanted it to. The reality has been that the impact and implications of that time have trickled through for a lot longer than people anticipated. And so we are still in an economy that is still trying to stabilize. And a lot of that gives opportunity to small businesses. While big businesses was trying to figure out how to make a company of 30,000 people work from home, we were able to move a lot more rapidly. And so I think, I'm not sure if the research has been done yet, but I would hazard a guess that the market share of products and services that go to smaller companies has gone up, because we were there and we were able to move quick enough. That's been a massive shift. But that has a secondary point to it, which is the goal of many small businesses, particularly those that are B2B, so business to business, has always been the big contracts. You know, winning the corporate contracts has always been like the big goal. And what's happened since the pandemic is that is not as stable as it has been in the past. It doesn't save you, because what it creates is a single point of failure now. You are almost entirely dependent on this one big company. And the last year, 2023, a lot of the problems for small businesses was because large businesses just stopped. they stopped agreeing new contracts. They stopped paying as frequently or as regularly as they did. Everything became slower, and that had this impact on the rest of the supply chain. And so this year, I think the movement we've seen so far has been predominantly people moving away from looking for that big company contract and finding ways of having several to create that contingency so they don't get put in that position again.
Yeah, really, really interesting. Thank you. Thank you for explaining that in a lot of detail. And you've been such a pleasure to have on the podcast today, Lee. Where can people find you? Where can they connect with you?
So I am pretty much always on LinkedIn. You'll always find me on LinkedIn. I am Lee Lam on my private profile, but the company profile is there as well, Your Startup Partner. We have a website, yourstartuppartner.com, which is where you can find out details of working with me either as a one-off project or under my retainer program. But I also have this new product, the Platform Advisor in yourpocket.com. This is a platform designed for very small businesses that just need to know that someone's there when they need them. And it's a platform with a knowledge base on it, but also with a Slack community in the background. So they can contact me whenever they want, and they'll get a almost real-time response to the question, so it doesn't slow them down. And I already have a few people on there who, you know, see me as a lifeline because they know that when they need help, I'll be there. So advisoryinyourpocket.com.
Thank you so much, Lee. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to the Career Happiness Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media or with somebody you know it will make a significant difference to. And remember, if you haven't already, please take some time to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much.